This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
My name is Memo Acton. I'm an artist and a musician, and I'm also assistant professor here at UCSD in the visual arts department, professor of new media and computational arts.
I'm Katie Payton Hofstetter. I'm an artist, writer, and curator. I taught for 10 years at Parsons, the New School, and at FIT. I taught professional writing for the arts, different types of writing with art students, and curating and public programming.
I was born in Istanbul, Turkey, and I grew up there. I went to university in Turkey, but then I left when I was 21 and I moved to London. And I lived in London for 21 years. So I spent nearly all of my adult life in England. And then I've been in California since 2021.
And I grew up in Macon, Georgia. I moved to New York after college, and I was there for 15 years. I ran a collaborative studio space there, and I moved to Southern California about 3 years ago.
I guess my earliest memories of art is being obsessed with M.C. Escher, the Dutch illustrationist painter who drew a lot of optical illusion type work that was really questioning also perception and notions of reality. I was also very obsessed with Dali at an early age, but also a big part of how I got into doing what I'm doing now, because I work with, I'm a computational artist, and I got into programming at the age of 10. I was also very into film, particularly filmmakers like David Lynch. That just gradually evolved into what I do now.
I grew up in Macon, Georgia, and I used to go out into the woods behind our house. And I would go out until I didn't know where I was, and then I would spin around until I didn't know which direction home was. I recognized the sort of like early consciousness changing, sort of setting a palette, and then I could just imagine any story I wanted there. I would write, I would draw, I would build. So I guess that was my earliest form of art, imaginative storytelling. I moved to New York, make large scale works in charcoal, oil paint, acrylic paint. And I created these sculptures out of plastic, out of lucite. I always loved to dance. My parents enrolled me in ballet lessons when I think I was 3. It goes back as early as I can remember.
I'm really passionate about, at least when it comes to art, is trying to share and explore feelings and thoughts about the world in ways that can help others feel and see the things that I feel and see, and would like to encourage others to feel and see.
You know, thinking about those early times, I would want to create these worlds in my head, and then I'd want to tell people about them. So I'd write down the story, or I'd try to draw what it looked like. And I think that's carried through to today. I've made like various forms of public artwork, trying to bring messages. It's hard to imagine anything other than what we live in right now. One job of the artist is to imagine those other worlds, sort of hold out that imagining, because we can only ask for what we can imagine.
So the conversation about art and technology is an interesting one. I've been working with computers, with AI. I write code, that's my medium. And so this question comes up a lot, you know, art and technology. And art has never been independent of technology.
So I have a pretty traditional artistic background, trained in drawing and painting and writing and dance, and all of that is incorporated into this piece. But I'm interested in the intersection of art and emerging technology, especially because I think that working with emerging technology is working with our present. It's working with our near future and the way we live today.
I'm Memo Acton.
I'm Katie Payton Hofstetter.
Welcome to the Jeffrey B. Graham Perspectives on Ocean Science lecture.
I stand before you today, a collection of trillions of cells, more than half of which are not even genetically human, but other microorganisms.
Trillions of incredibly complex, intelligent little machines work together to keep me alive so that I can keep them alive.
And somehow, through their interactions, I emerge. And to me, it feels like I am a single unitary entity with clear boundaries that I call my skin.
But intellectually, I know that I am in fact a network of cells and organisms.
A chimera.
But I am more than that.
I am not just the network of cells within my body.
I am also the network of atoms that I borrow and exchange with my environment, with other living and non-living things, the atoms that I eat and drink, the atoms that I inhale and exhale.
Forged in the dying hearts of stars.
Exploding into supernova.
Billions of years ago.
Billions of light years away.
Spewed across galaxies to come together.
For a very brief moment in time.
To momentarily become me.
And you.
I know I'm part of a living planet, but how can I feel this in my body? Dance is one of our earliest biotechnologies.
We dance to connect to each other.
We dance to connect back to the living Earth.
Extend our bodies beyond our skin into the living environment.
We dance to remember who we are. I feel like I'm missing something, but what am I missing?
I am in superposition. My body is an animal alive in the present, but my mind is trapped in the future and the past.
I dance to a pulse inside me that did not begin with me. How do I care for you?
I stand before you today, nourished by ancient oceans.
Warmed by ancient starlight.
My body, a site of journeys and transits.
Portals and interfaces.
A chimera.
What if we shed our skin?
Vibrate in collective effervescence.
Super radiance. Two miles beneath my feet, life eats rock, draws energy from metal.
In these sunless tunnels, our ground is their sky.
We have burrowed into the heart of the earth, drilled into the clockwork of the planet.
From the atoms forged in the stars, I create the minerals of life.
We are the alchemists, the earth shapers, the architects.
We are the lichen, the fungi, the microbes, the chemolithotrophs, metabolizing rock into soil.
I am the soil.
I am alive.
I am the rootless plants that retain water.
I am the wet sediments that becomes mud.
I am the worms that wriggle.
I am the cracks that grow into rivers, veins across the skin of the earth.
My skin.
Soil stands up.
I am the soil that stands up, unfurls.
As fungi.
Lofts into the sky.
As forests. I am the forest, feeding on the sun. I breathe, you breathe, we breathe.
How do I care for you?
I am the forest, rivers streaming water from the soil into the sky.
Here in the sky, water has a secret name. A microbe so perfectly shaped, it nucleates ice directly from vapor.
I am the trees lofting microbes to the sky. I seed my breath with life, cast a spell.
Pseudomonas syringa.
To summon atmospheric rivers from the living air, I call back the rain.
From oceans above to oceans below, my lungs. My heart.
My heart.
How do I care for you?
I am the moon that gently pulls on your skin. I am the flowering tides. My currents pulse like arteries. My veins bloom blue-green.
I am the waves spuming with life. I am the spirit in your breath. I am the air-sea boundary, the frisky interface, dynamic, volcanic, galvanic. I breathe, you breathe, we breathe.
I am the waves that caress your skin. As my body warms, I thrash and tear deeper, deeper into the seabed, deeper into myself, deeper into my past. My fury casts into the sky ancient memories from the deep.
Biosediments.
Calcified remnants of ancient life.
I am the reefs that sing, summoning wanderers. I am the larva of coral and fish drifting in the open ocean. I follow the music of a thriving reef, calling me to my new home.
I am the diatoms that once drifted in an ancient sea, now a desert. In the Holocene depths of the Sahara, the cratered sand floor of a paleo lake, a reservoir of dust between paleo shores.
I am the sand, ancient memories of life. I am the wind that swirls the desert dust into the living sky, swarms, scatters across my body. Atmospheric rivers bloom red, plumes of mineral dust, an offering from the distant past.
The past blows into the present. I am the soil, thousands of miles away, replenished.
Life laughs green. Unfurls deep memory.
I am the fungal air vents that throw my spores to meet the winds.
I stand up.
Loft into the sky.
As forests.
Bring life back to air.
Bring life back to Earth.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. We're very honored to be here.
This was a performance rendition of Super Radiance. What we performed was including two chapters, chapters one and two, and chapter two is currently on view here at the Birch Aquarium as part of the Embodied Pacific Ocean and Scene exhibition. And we're very grateful for the support of Scripps and Birch, in particular Nan Renner and Megan Dickerson and Tina Mao and Robert Rad, with their, you know, supporting their project, and also Cheryl and Michael and the team and countless others who we haven't had a chance to meet, for putting on this event.
We're going to speak in more detail about this work, but before we do, we'd like to very briefly introduce our practice and tell you about the questions that brought us together and to this piece.
So I will go first. Many years ago, I had this realization that all of my work was about waves, and it was also about gods, and that somehow quantum mechanics unified the two. And looking back, this I tweeted this 10 years ago, and now when I look back, I think with the term waves, I think I was referring to the patterns in nature which we humans have managed to recognize, deconstruct, and formalize into theories and equations that we somehow find even elegant or beautiful. And I think with the term gods, I was referring to those mysterious aspects of nature which we have yet to understand, and the lengths that we go to, the stories we tell in our attempts to make sense of them. And I think with the term quantum mechanics, I am referring to the fringes of human knowledge which we empirically know to be accurate and can understand through the language of mathematics, but we're not yet able to fully comprehend on a deeper level. And so within this backdrop, in my work, I investigate the tensions between technology, ecology, science, and spirituality. I draw connections between intelligence in nature, intelligence in machines, perception, consciousness, biology, physics, and philosophies of spirituality, ritual, and religion. I'm inspired by nature, or rather the nature of nature, the fundamental forces and underlying processes that shape everything that happens around and inside us. When I look at a flower, I see the nuclear fusion in the heart of the sun, the photons scattering in the atmosphere to create a crimson sky, the photosynthesis that fuels all of life on Earth, the fluid dynamics driving the wind and the waves crashing on the shore, and the complex ecosystems they cultivate via a symbiotic spread of seeds. I study these hidden processes that shape our world, and I develop systems that abstract behavior. And I am fascinated by our capacity to dig deeper and deeper and discover and learn more about the poetry of nature. I write code, that's my craft, so to speak. I write code to create speculative simulations and data dramatizations. I write code to create moving images, experimental animations, sounds. I work with robotics. I create interactive systems controlling robotic lights and lasers. I collaborate with dancers. I collaborate with machines. I build interactive systems exploring meaningful human control. I create visual instruments that augment our capacity for creative expression, immersive environments that respond to human presence, computational systems that allow and foster expressive human-machine interaction. I work with emerging technologies, thinking of these technologies as extensions of our body, as extensions of our mind, thinking about their impact on us as individuals, how we behave and express ourselves, and ultimately their impact on culture, ethics, law, tradition, ritual, and religion. I do think about ritual and religion a lot, not necessarily the old, well-established rituals, religions, or forms of spirituality, but rather their new evolved incarnations, new spiritual frameworks, new forms of worship, and the values enmeshed with the technologies that we're creating. What I'm really fascinated by is we, who are biologically identical to what we were 200,000 years ago, how do we cope and adapt throughout the crazy technological developments that we've lived through? And I think of rituals as algorithms for the body and mind that transform our mental and emotional states to otherwise unattainable modes of being. And this is why, in a lot of my work, I am trying to capture and convey these sensations that we might relate to as spiritual or even religious experiences. I enjoy treading the lines between comfortable and uncomfortable. I embrace the contradictory complexities of our techno-culture. So in my practice, I try to advance critical perspectives on emerging technologies and social power dynamics. At the same time, I also strive to create meditative and introspective environments that nurture a sense of wonderment or connection to the planet, connection to the cosmos, connection to each other and all living beings. Finally, I think a lot about the mind. Human mind, non-human minds, biological minds, synthetic minds, distributed minds. And this is ultimately the topic that I received my PhD in, artificial intelligence. I'm really interested in the technologies and the politics of the technologies and where AI as a concept came from and how the technologies have manifested themselves today in our lives and the social and cultural implications of the path that we're on. But I'm equally fascinated by a more speculative metaphysics of AI as reflections, or rather refractions, of ourselves, as echoes on how we perceive the world and how we make meaning, as a computational lens on trying to understand ourselves, the nature of the mind, and perhaps eventually even consciousness.
I'm Katie Payton Hofstetter. Hi. I'm an artist, writer, and curator, exploring the dynamics between our bodies and technology, between knowing and feeling, between knowledge and embodiment. I'm interested in how emerging technologies, including AI and a lifelike and living technosphere, affect culture. I was trained in drawing, painting, sculpture, writing, and dance. This piece was about silence, and it used the technology of the scroll, which fits every space and no space and always keeps something hidden. I also worked with industrial plastics, something that's also in all of our bodies, in our blood, even now crossing the blood-brain barrier into our brains. I bent these industrial rods into entangled organic forms, and then I staged them over poetry and words I'd written and gathered and performed with other artists. So I was combining drawings and sculptures and digital images and performance and projects with contracts, and often combining it all in collaboration with other artists and writers and dancers and poets like Joseph Quintela. This is their paintings on the wall with my video. It was all very, let's just put everything together and see what sparks. This is at Dumbo Sky, a Brooklyn space run by poet Rachel Eliza Griffiths. But I was also basically running my New York studio as a collaborative space at the time. It was called Peanut Underground, after my dog, and it was a basement storage space in the East Village. My work is slushy. It moves across disciplines. I was given the title VP of Liminal Operations by the trickstery arts activist organization Beautiful Trouble, where I've done work helping to connect art theories to social movements. For the past 10 years, I've been making work at the intersection of art and emerging technology. I first began exploring these themes through a series of interviews, essays, and curatorial projects, as well as public art and education. I'm interested in how contemporary artists and poets are exploring stress testing and embodying emerging technologies, and how this in turn affects culture. The themes raised by emerging technologies are a way for me to explore how we live in the present, as well as the near future. For 10 years, I taught arts writing, curating, and public programming for the arts at the New School and at FIT. And in that time, I also created a high school program called Future Art Models for Apex Art, a nonprofit in Lower Manhattan, where young creatives would design alternative professional models for the future that they wanted to live in. We learned a lot, but one thing that really stood out was that in every school we visited, young people were so frustrated by the story of the solo genius, the great artist. Across the board, they wanted to see models that were compassionate, collaborative, and even collective, while maintaining their authentic voice. And they wanted to work in a world that rewarded those values. I've also co-founded several international public art campaigns. I was co-creator of The Climate Clock, a monument to planetary time, and a global call to act in time on the climate crisis. Monuments tell us what we value as a culture. We were featured on the front page of the arts section of the New York Times twice and a million other media outlets as the United States blew past its climate goals. Last year, according to the Copernicus data, we recorded a 1.5 degree temperature rise for the first time. This was the hottest January on record. Monuments also tell us whose voices matter. In 2020, I co-founded the Aurora Network, which brought together 70 artists creating new monuments in augmented reality to diverse female and gender expansive scientists, artists, activists, scholars, and historic leaders in public spaces. My collaborators, Ann Wichman, Clara Francesca, and I created this program during the pandemic as an outdoor exhibition in all five boroughs of New York and as a guided walking tour and educational network. But it also quickly became a multi-continent database of feminist artists of all genders who have created and are interested in public artworks. We're currently active in New York, Munich, Berne, and Venice. This funny thing happened when we were ideating on the project and looking at the public monumentscape of the city where we lived at the time, and Anne was saying, you know, there are 150 public monuments in New York and only 8 are women. And I was just like, how many horses are there? And we looked it up, and there are 11. So there are more monuments to horses than named women. And in fact, going by the public art, you would barely think any named women or people of color lived in the city at all, and that we were maybe under military occupation. Monuments tell us who we value as a culture, and they also tell us whose voice matters. It's February 2025, so I'll say this. If we look around our public spaces and what we see are bullies, that's a message about whose voice matters, who and what leadership and authority looks like. In 2021, I wrote a long-form essay called Bodies on the Blockchain about artists who are logging biological, genetic, and behavioral information on a digital ledger to invoke a conversation about body sovereignty in our techno-present. I was invited to curate this into a series of exhibitions, first in a virtual space, Epoch Gallery, and then in a physical gallery in Los Angeles, Vellum, and finally for the University Gallery at Cal Poly and the Center for Expressive Technologies. The essay and the exhibition took the premise, technology is moving into our bodies, and our bodies are moving into technology. The stakes are high. Will we double our health spans or create a stratified techno-dystopian Gilead? The presentations included the virtual exhibition on touchscreen and head-mounted displays, as well as sculpture, series of activations and performance lectures and participatory rituals and spells. The question running through all of this is a question of embodiment. Knowledge about the magnitude of the problems we're facing does not alone create the mindset to solve them. What does? This leads me into collaboration with Memo and the creation of Super Radiance. Now, we'd like to take you into our world and discuss the themes, motivation, and process behind Super Radiance. Super Radiance is a multi-screen video and sound installation and film that invites the viewer to extend their bodily perception beyond the skin and into the living environment. We realize there may be a preconception that artists working with AI simply say,
computer, make me a beautiful art, very detailed, magical.
We're going to take you through our process, which combines poetry, dance, and insights from neuroscience, woven together with code, simulations, and generative AI.
And spreadsheets.
Lots of spreadsheets. We are deeply embedded within complex webs of life. It's one thing to intellectually know this, but how can we feel it in our bodies?
we drew upon the idea of embodied simulation, a cognitive phenomena where as you observe another person moving, you feel their movement in your own body.
As Vittorio Galassi writes, the objectual other becomes another self. Dance is one of our earliest biotechnologies. Through ritual and ecstatic dance, we dance to experience union with the universe directly. But now we'll begin with another ancient technology, poetry.
After months of research, we began to draft the initial outline of the script during a residency at Stochastic Labs in Berkeley. Most mornings, this process began in the woods with long forest meditations and walks. And we began with the premise of a living earth, holding space for intelligence both within the self and distributed across the planet.
I am a body. I am also a multitude of smaller living bodies. I am a body. I'm also part of a greater living body, a planetary body. In developing the narrative, which would be an interplay between language, choreography, and imagery, we explored how to represent this multitude of selves.
We wanted the piece to reconnect us spiritually to this body, to help us understand what exists within the perceived boundaries of the skin is only part of the story. So we laid out all our ideas on a table and eventually wrote the script. And then we used this poem to also inform the rhythmic flow and also of the dance and choreography.
The choreography needed to work on multiple levels. We wanted to communicate connection and gratitude to the earth, like a ritual celebrating awe, reverence, and blessing. From earth to sky, dissolving the boundaries of the body, seeping into the environment. It also needed to create evolving compositions in space, such that we could use the body's form and movements as a foundation to create metamorphosing life forms. Embedded in animate environments to drive the unfurling of fungi. Transitioning into trees reaching for the sky. Into underwater kelp forests and back to a living, breathing woodland. We use the twirling energy of a pirouette to drive waves that blossom into feathery hydroids, churn into ocean foam, spew the surf against the sandy beach, and throw the desert dust swirling into the sky. We wanted to really blend the body into its environment, operating beyond the perceived boundaries of the skin. So we used the dancer's movements to advect a fluid simulation with particles and force fields. We created a real-time simulation environment, which processes the video of the dance, to create multiple video layers, which we'll later use to control many aspects of our generative workflow.
We brought our dance video, which was Katie, into a node-based programming environment called Touch Designer. And each of these nodes does some basic processing on the video, like creating a silhouette mat. Here, each silhouette has a different color, and this allows us to treat them and their environments independently. When we're working with the AI, we'll talk about this shortly later. We also do things like detecting edges, calculating movements and movement velocity. And then a few steps later, all of these go into a fluid simulation and eventually into several particle simulations. And the particles create a visual link between all of these different environments. They also represent the continuous presence of life, from scene to scene, from schools of fish to lichen to stars to microbes, those tiny living creatures that exist in every environment on Earth. Each of these nodes have dozens, sometimes even hundreds of parameters. And we play with these parameters in real time to affect many aspects of the way the fluids and the particles move. This, for example, is a classic turbulent force field. Here we have the force pushing outwards from the body as if the body is emitting something here, it's going inwards to the body. We can also create flows in any particular direction. And the way that the fluid and the particles move affects how the final imagery moves, for example, here, rising to the top. And in addition to playing with these parameters in real time, We also keyframed them and locked them to a timeline to synchronize with the development of the narrative and the script. And from these simulations, we export multiple video files, which we will use just now as layers or masks to control many different aspects of our generative AI workflow.
Currently, the piece consists of two chapters. Both use the dance and simulation as a starting point, but after that, we use very different pipelines for each chapter. Chapter one, Embodied Simulation, meditates on the idea of the body and the self as a transient assembly of cells, microorganisms, and cosmic matter, temporarily organized to give rise to what we perceive as a body and a self. For this chapter, we carefully selected keyframes from the edited dance and simulation video and exported the frames from the fluid and particle simulation. We then hand-painted these frames to create compositions with the color and content that we wanted. We used a custom generative AI workflow to transform these hand-drawn images into organic life forms, taking the color and composition from our drawings. We developed another piece of custom software to animate these creatures and bring them to life, using the movement from the dancer and the fluid and particle simulations as a driving force. The final effect, we hope, is to create a sanctuary, framing dance as an ancient biotechnology, a primal, unifying act that connects us to each other and to the living world. While chapter one looks inward, chapter two ventures outward, beyond the skin, emphasizing the planet as a living organism and the interplay between trillions of interdependent living organisms. For this, it was important that the body was now embedded and entangled with the living environment. This called for a different process. We worked with researchers at the Scripps Institute of Oceanography, both for conceptual inspiration and research data in the form of images. We were inspired by conversations with the research team at SOARS, the Scripps Ocean Atmosphere Research Simulator, about the air-sea interface, about boundaries as dynamic sites of exchange, of journeys and transits. Scripps Museum scientist Charlotte Sade offered us thousands of images from which we carefully selected to build a custom data set. And we also included thousands of photographs of natural environments that we took ourselves and even sourced from family members, ranging from the deserts of Egypt and Jordan to the glaciers of New Zealand, to the Smoky Mountains of North Carolina, the redwoods of California, and the rocky beaches of the Aegean coast. We also included photos and videos that we took on site visits to Birch Aquarium. For chapter one, we developed a custom pipeline using just Python, Hugging Face libraries, and Touch Designer. For chapter two, we added the open source toolkit Comfy UI to design a custom generative AI workflow using a number of open source plugins. The full list, if you want to see it, can be seen at superradiance.net.
Chapter two is over 7 minutes long, and we broke it down into around 60 shots, and we created this custom workflow to process each shot. Here at the top is some general information about the shot, and then we load all the video layers that we'd created in Touch Designer. These will control the various aspects of how the final imagery, like the composition and where we have movement and what kind of materials we'll be using, etc. We then create a series of masks for these technologies called IP adapters and control nets, which I'll talk about shortly. So we'd colored the dancers red, green, and blue, if you recall. Here we can filter out and select each dancer and create these localized masks to treat each dancer each separately. This is where we apply the IP adapters, which is effectively kind of like a material selection. And each shot has different requirements. So we created this as a modular processing blocks, which we can enable and disable. So some shots, for example, we use one material or IP adapter for the whole frame. Sometimes background and foreground is separate, just two IP adapters. Sometimes each dancer is treated independently with a different material. These were images that we got from Charlotte. We also do blending and interpolation for smooth transitions. I'll talk about that shortly. And finally, we again use the outputs from Touch Designer to control the composition of movements using a technique called control nets. We in fact use two control nets, one for background, one for dancers, so that we get more fine-tuned control. So having created this workflow, we don't actually manually edit the parameters and run it from this interface. Instead, we run it programmatically using, I promised, a spreadsheet. So this is a shot list. We created a shot list in a spreadsheet. Each row here represents a shot where we specify the information and settings that define how we want that shot to be processed, like start and end times, the lines of the poem being spoken, an optional prompt that we can use, the IP adapter configuration, control net parameters, sampler settings, a whole bunch more. Again, we use custom software which loads and runs our Comfy UI project for each shot, individually applying the settings from our spreadsheet. Each tab at the bottom is a different run, and we did lots and lots of tests. You can see the red column there is all our feedback. We tried things, tried different IP adapters, foreground, background, control net weights and timings and guidance scale, etc. In all of these runs, the settings remain fixed throughout the duration of the shot. Once we have a configuration that we like for the shots, we group them into chunks. When we run a chunk, all of the settings, including the IP adapters, are interpolated so that we get these long, continuous sequences which are smoothly evolving. Delving into the rich symbiotic webs of our living planet, Chapter 2, Embodying Earth, journeys beneath the surface where life metabolizes rock into soil. The piece weaves together the dynamic exchange between land, water, and sky, highlighting the transformative dance between geological and biological forces as life both emerges from and reshapes the planet, the way ancient life continues to nourish the present, just as we will nourish the future. And that is the end of our presentation. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And enjoyed the insight into how you created this really wonderful piece of work.
So thank you.
We do have time for questions. We've got a little light shed on there, so I can see the...
I think there's a question at the back already. Is there a mic there? Or
I'll just use this one, yeah. If that's all right, and you can use that microphone. Got it.
Hi, did you say how long it took from conception of this idea through fruition of the end process, program?
Do you want to go or shall I? It's difficult to say an exact time because these ideas are bubbling like many, many years. Like a lot of these ideas of distributed intelligence and thinking about being embedded in, we've been exploring this space for many, many years. But I can say, if you talk about actual production, where we say, okay, we sit down, even that's difficult to say because...
When did we record the dance?
We recorded the dance in December 2023, and the piece was finished September 2024. So I guess that is a good way of framing it. She's the brains of the duo. I think there's another question over there.
Hi, thank you for the talk. It was really good. And I saw that you had, I think, an extra slide about like that had some of the computer information. And I was just hoping you could give us an idea of like the compute power required to make something like this.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So
We ran this locally on basically a gaming computer, and the actual, so we didn't train any models. We did probably a couple of weeks of the actual running was probably a couple of weeks of a gaming computer. We used a pre-trained model as a foundation, and then so with this IP adapter technique, that allows us to use a pre-trained model that has a lot of that kind of layers built in, but then we can use the images that we're using to guide the final outputs. The actual energy usage of training one of these models from scratch is humongous. But yeah, we just used pre-trained models on a local computer.
Did you also compose the music for the soundtrack?
Okay, good question. So I did the music for chapter one, which is the piano and choral piece. And then this, in the performance that we did, it was only 3 minutes. The full version is actually, they're both 7 minutes. But for this performance, we cut down chapter one. So I made the music for that. The second piece, which looks like this, that was composed by a Dutch artist who goes by the name of Machine Fabric, who I discovered on Spotify maybe 7-8 years ago. And I've been collaborating with him. I just reached out to him, and I've been collaborating with him pretty much every year now.
And yeah. I'll just say, on the website, or actually here at Birch, well, no, not chapter one. On the website, you can see the full chapter one, which is 7 minutes, which has the full score that Memo wrote. And he was going through some old music he'd written in the past, and I heard these two pieces, and we just hired a composer for the second chapter, and I was like, we have to have those for the first chapter. Like, you're composing the music.
I wanted to get Rutger, Machine Fabric. He did chapter two. I wanted him to do chapter one as well, and Katie convinced me to do chapter one.
So please go to the website and watch the full chapter one so you can hear it. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Unbelievable stuff. I love it. I'm wondering if you're looking at all these stretched geometries and so on, where you're playing around with things. Have you begun to explore fractional dimensions, fractals, in your work?
I have played with fractals a lot. Of course, one can get lost in fractals, especially when you look at like the code or like the algorithm of just two or three lines, and it creates this infinite complexity. And nature is, of course, fractal-like. It's self-repeating on many, many different scales. So with this project, we didn't go there, but it is definitely something which is fascinating to explore. Yeah.
I have, oh, yes. I do as well.
Thank you so much for your work and for your talk. So many people these days are worried about AI, and I'm wondering, what is the conversation in your community of people who are using AI for good, using AI to expand our perspective and our perception on the world?
All right, I'll take this one. In our community, I think what we see is a lot of, I call it stress testing, embodying, like really trying to understand the effect of these technologies, not just on our culture, but on our bodies. And that's definitely something we wanted to wrestle with here. We know that AI can do a lot of good, and I can let Memo speak to some of those projects, you know, medical applications, protein folding. We also know that when we embed values in a system, that system contains those values. So anything we create with values of unchecked growth and overreach is going to come pre-programmed with those values. So we're really at a crucial point, because that is the values we're bringing into this right now. So I think we don't want to shy away. This technology is here. It is coming. It is only getting bigger. And I think our opinion and a lot of people in our community say we need to meet this head on if it's not going to be determined by forces that we don't agree with or that we feel are destructive. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big question, so I will also add, I am very worried about AI. That's why I went and got a PhD in it. I started my PhD in 2014, and I thought, you know, this AI thing's going to be big. I want to make sure that I know what I'm dealing with. And so I started my PhD in 2014. I'm very worried about it, but I'm not scared of AI. I'm scared of people. And that's the scary thing. You know, you give scary people scary things. So I'm not worried about the ultimate doomsday, you know, AI waking up and taking over the Terminator scenario. That's a distraction. But I'm very worried about very powerful psychopaths using this to just really strengthen their power. As artists, we dream, you know, hope. We need to have hope. Otherwise, what's the purpose of living? We're part of the, movement to dream about shifting values. And if we can, you know, I would love to have nanobots in my bloodstream monitoring all of my cells and giving me real-time information about my health. But I don't want Elon Musk's nanobots in my body. So how do we build that world where we can develop these nanobots and use them with trust? I don't think it's going to happen, but we can at least set that as a target. And yeah.
Thank you so much for that answer. My mind is blown. This has been really, really ephemeral, magical. Now, the question is, you both have practices before Super Radiance as solo artists. And I'm wondering, the collaboration, like, how did it change you? So I think I'm going to get answers from Katie and Memo separately on this.
Okay.
You want to go first? Can we start? I love collaboration. I love when you start riffing on something and all of it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the ideas feel like they're, you know, you wake up thinking about it, you go to sleep thinking about it, you dream about it. And this was that kind of collaboration. We said we recorded the video last early winter. We started talking about it probably the months before. And one big part of the process that I loved was just reading together. Just like, we just couldn't read enough. We couldn't get enough of like, okay, what about this? You have to hear about this. And something that anyone who's collaborated before probably knows is, it's one thing to learn something. It's one thing to read something. It's another thing to talk about it with someone else. It's another thing to try to teach someone. And that process is just happening over and over and over again between both of us. And it was just something, you know, this time that it just felt so intuitive. And I think also, like, both wanting to bring out the best in each other's abilities. Sort of, there might be something, you know, like with the music, Memo was going to hire a composer and he's going to blush about this, but I heard this music he'd written years ago and it's so beautiful. Like, when you hear it's so beautiful. And he wouldn't, I say this, he wouldn't have included it. It took me hearing it to say, please bring this talent in. And I feel like that happened over and over again.
So collaborations don't always work. The way I frame it is that, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. That's not really a collaboration. That's like two people worked together. Some collaborations are 1 + 1, you get 1.5. Some collaborations 1 + 1, you get less than one. That's just, it's happened. Like, I, you know, anyone who's collaborated enough times will have experienced that. And then sometimes you get 1 + 1 and you get 5 or 10. And those are the really magical collaborations. And, you know, that happened with us with this project. And what that means is the way, if I come back from quantitative to qualitative, like someone suggests an idea and that sparks an idea in the other person who then says something which sparks another idea in the other person. And that goes just bounces back and forth until you get something that no one had suggested, and it couldn't have existed if you didn't have that back and forth feedback loop. And then also one thing is important to remember, that whoever suggested that the last idea that makes it into the piece, whose ever mouth that came out of, it wasn't their idea. Like sometimes you get really good collaborations where it's 1 + 1 = 10, but the person who said the last thing feels ownership because they think like, well, I said that, so that's my idea, so I'm the artist here. I think we're both mature enough to realize that that's not a productive mindset.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.